Wednesday, April 25th, 2007, upon further review, episode number 39. Well, we've got three hosts in the show for this week, and that means that you all get 33% more opinions, 33% more ideas, 33% more entertainment, 33% more excitement, 33% more fun, and of course, 33% more cliches, as soon as I can think of more of them. Okay, upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And we are pleased to welcome in a guest star from a previous upon further review. Russ is with us all the way from California, from the BH. Welcome, Russ. Welcome back.
Hello.
Russ is back with us. And we had Russ come on the show for a couple of reasons. One of the major ones being that we're doing some subjects that Russ has a lot of opinions about. And we thought, who better to go to supplement the opinions that we bring you on this show from week to week than Russ. So that's why Russ has been brought onto the show for a different perspective, an additional perspective. And we have a number of things that we have to do this week. Before we get to the actual review subjects, I just want to give a couple of shout-outs to people out there. First of all, I want to give a shout-out to our friend Drum Intellected, who mentioned us on his show, which is now, I think, in its 17th episode. And also, if I'm not mistaken, if I read it correctly, it was a little bit cryptic, but I believe that his family has just had a baby, I believe. So we want to congratulate him for that. Like, they had a picture of a baby, he and his wife, yeah.
Okay, had a baby.
So we want it, yeah, not him personally.
He would have communal.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, his family, yeah. Yeah. They produced.
His family had a baby as a collective experience. Anyway, so we want to say congratulations to him. That's
great. It takes a village.
That's right. That's right.
He does take a village. So you said that he's also a city worker, I guess?
That's right. And he said that, you know, if you ever figure out how to be able to get Sluggy Freelance past the city workers. Although, actually, I heard, Russ, you were telling me that you have figured out a way to get past the wall of doom that is
firewall
at a lot of these places. Is that true?
Oh, my God. I almost flipped out in my office today because I was so happy that I could finally access email from my work, which, since I work for a newspaper, is frowned upon, but I don't really have access to any super sensitive information, so it's stupid. So anyway, the technique is you use Google Translator and you translate the blocked web page from English to English, and that gets around any firewall that they can at you. It's amazing.
See that? This episode's going to be huge.
God.
We'll have 1,000 downloads.
You just have to access the web address where it's like Google Translator, and then you write EN/EN for English to English, and then you put in at the end the blocked website, and it shows up like magic.
Nice. That's
now I can
funny.
Play fantasy baseball from work, which
oh
is
my
extremely
God.
Important.
All right, well, I'll try it tomorrow. I'll try it tomorrow, and I'll let you know, because it was funny, actually. I can still get Homestar Runner at work, and they're actually, one of the recent episodes is him addressing this issue of firewalls at work and not being able to access things. So it's very funny that I can still access him, but now that I know this method, I will try it out and I will let you know.
Yeah, and now that we've got this out there, it'll be closed as a loophole in about a week. You know.
Speaking of loopholes,
Strong Bad's like, step one, throw boot at your systems administrator.
Well, though he had something like that, she created some firewall program where he was able to some like granny high jump or something. So she puts in this disc and this little granny does a high jump over, and then you're over the firewall. But yeah, but another funny Google thing is, did you ever enter in? Did you hear about this? Where it's been forwarded a lot around on the internet, where you go into Google and you go to maps and directions and you enter in like New York to London.
Yeah.
And it goes, you go down to...
I just got this from a band member who just sent this to me.
Okay, you'd already gotten it from me.
Yeah, I know.
And you go down to like number 23 or 24 or something, and it says swim across Atlantic Ocean, 3,264 miles, something like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and I tried it for the West Coast, and it doesn't do it for the West Coast.
I like the little Easter eggs in Google.
Yeah.
It doesn't, I couldn't find a way where it told you to swim across the Pacific.
I don't want to be responsible for your death.
They think that people in the West Coast are more likely to pay attention to it.
Maybe the West Coast people will, yeah.
So we'll do the best we can on that score, but there you go. So congratulations to Drum Intellected, and now that you guys know this about Google, you know, check it out and let us know whether it works. We also want to thank Eric from the How To Girl podcast, who thanked us for our review and said that it was very useful and helpful, and there were some good things that he got out of it. And they actually have a new DVD, which is going to be coming out, which is based on some mini shows, I think, in out in time, he says, for Christmas gift giving, which gives him a nice wide range of things that are going to be finished. Just in time, he'll be able to finish it. But anyway, it was useful, so we want to thank him about that.
All right.
And then last, we want to thank, once again, Chris, who's a new listener to us from the Sluggy people, and Michael, who was the one who first put us on to Sluggy Freelance, for giving us some of the suggestions that we have for this week. And we are going to be using them this week, so we wanted to give you guys some thanks from the very beginning.
All right,
so we've got three things.
Hey,
yes, go ahead, Russ.
I'm sorry, really quick. I just typed into my Google Maps, I asked for directions to the English Channel from here, and it gives me like these crazy like 19 toll roads to get to the Mass Turnpike, and then I turn right at the Long Wharf, and then step 36, swim across the Atlantic Ocean, 3,462 miles.
Yeah, I mean, it works for the Atlantic Ocean. For some reason, I couldn't get it to work for the Pacific Ocean. I don't know what it is.
Anyway, that's hilarious.
Yes.
I love Google.
Because they're out on the West Coast, so they don't find it funny.
Yeah, but it's the Long Wharf.
I don't know.
They always take you to the Long Wharf.
Well, yeah.
To swim.
Yeah.
I guess that has a good entry point or something.
On
yeah.
Your swim.
That's like the smallest distance.
If they took or maybe they have good parking there or something. I don't know.
Oh, goodness. Well, all right. So the three things that we've got. That's right.
Exactly.
The three things that we've got on the docket for you tonight are as follows. We're going to start out, and this again is thanks to Mike who gave us this suggestion, is a review of chewing gum. Now, I will tell you that here at Upon Further Review, there was some debate as to whether to make this a major review or a more minor, you know, here's something neat about chewing gum.
Mini shout out.
But Clea has found some information that she thinks is extremely important to convey to all of you that has made this into a major review.
Well, no.
And so...
No, I said I thought it should be a major review before, but then when you found that white website... I mean,
that made it even more clear.
That we just
will explain.
Solidified it.
That's right. We will explain as time goes on. So we'll start with that. Then we're going to move on to something which is near and dear to Russ's and my heart, particularly. Clea, sort of, you know, peripherally, because, well, she's a Mariners fan, so what are you going to do? Major League Baseball. We're going to be talking about MLB. Russ is a Yankees fan. I am a Red Sox fan. And so we have some interesting perspectives, we think, on baseball and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the season, so we thought it was appropriate. And then we're going to conclude with a review of a person. This is actually a suggestion which comes to us from Chris, who wanted us to review someone with, as he said, widely derided yet highly respected figure with some obvious flaws, Ralph Nader. So we're going to be looking at some of those obvious flaws, obvious or not, as we go through the process of discussing Ralph Nader.
All right.
So let's start out then with chewing gum. And as I say, you know, we weren't sure what we wanted to do about this and whether we wanted to make it a big show, big, you know, part of the show or not. And then we found this website, and you can find this at, you may just have to search for chewing gum in Google, I think.
Yeah.
But it's on BBC News. And Clea, perhaps you can explain this in a way that will allow us to maintain our family-friendly appellation.
Oh my gosh. Yes, so Greg wouldn't let me do this because we have to remain family-friendly.
Yes. Just explain the broad
it's on
details.
BBC News. Doesn't that inherently make it family-friendly?
To the British. And, you know, let's...
they have
I'm just kidding.
Standards.
We have British listeners and you guys are great. But, you know, you have a little bit different standards.
Well, there's research.
And
of
cheeky.
Course...
Very cheeky.
There's research, and of course, Japan has made it popular, where there's a particular kind of gum that presumably can enhance...
It improves circulation,
size.
It reduces stress and fights aging, and also increases bust size.
Right.
It's called bust-up gum.
Right.
We're not making that up.
So, if anyone's tried it, let me know.
But
it's one of those things, though. If it improves circulation, where else does it improve it to?
All right. See, now this is what I meant. See?
Oh,
see?
Okay. This
is where
we're
not getting a family friendly. Where we were right.
All
see,
right.
This,
all right.
This is my
I'll stop at that.
So here's
then.
The point that we want to make is that chewing gum clearly has other effects and uses, and we think that's important.
Straight from Japan. It's happy erogenous zone gum. Delicious.
That's basically how it comes out. There's actually, we have here a history of chewing gum and bubble gum, and apparently this dates all the way back to the ancient Greeks, who used to chew mastiche, which was a chewing gum made from the resin of the mastic tree.
Right.
The drawback was that it tasted terrible. So I just made that up, but
yeah,
I'm just
you made
assuming.
That up.
Then we had the ancient Mayans,
right.
who chewed chicle, which is the sap from the sapodilla tree. So
right.
the ancient Mayans did it. North American Indians chewed the sap from spruce trees, and then they passed the habit along to the settlers. So this has been going on for a long time, the use of chewing gum.
The use of it for what?
Well, it can be used for a lot of different things. It used to be that chewing gum was just something that kids ate sort of like candy, and then they got wise to the whole preserve your tooth craze. So now a lot of people use
it
for whitening teeth.
But I'm saying, historically, what did they use it for, Greg?
Probably for hallucinogenic properties in some cases, at least in the case of the Mayans. In some cases, they chewed it because, as people have learned, it's relaxing to chew gum. I don't know.
This is the thing I want to ask. Does chewing gum make you hungry or make you able to put off your hunger?
As far as I know, I think initially it can be used as an appetite suppressant, but it will give you an upset stomach if you chew for too long, because then your body thinks you're eating, so it starts the digestive juices that don't feel good if you have an
empty
stomach.
Right, and that might make you hungry, right? If you're starting doing this and your body's saying, okay.
It'll make you queasy, probably. Yeah.
See, back when I was working in this residential program in Boston, we had a woman who was diabetic. But she had no control over her eating, so we had to regulate her eating. And she would constantly be saying she's hungry, So early on we thought, well, why don't we give her gum? So this will be a good idea. We'll help her tide her off until her next meal.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the overnight guys, I'm explaining to him, here's her stash of gum if she ever wants any. He was like, well, and again, this is just some guy who just, you know, sleeps there during the night. No credentials, no clinical, no medical background. He's like, well, but doesn't chewing gum make you hungry? I don't think that's a good idea. And suddenly, our plan was dead.
That and the fact that she kept swallowing the gum, which also wasn't really helping. She's like, I'm still hungry, but now I feel sick, but I'm still hungry. Yeah.
So there's that. And then, yeah, as you said recently, there's the whole aspect of whitening teeth and being able to chew it right afterwards. It can have all those positive effects.
All right. There's a chewing gum. There's an International Chewing Gum Association.
Again, further proving that there's an association for everything.
Yes. This further proves it.
Yes.
They even have tips for getting unstuck from gum. The benefits of gum.
They have tips for getting gum out of your hair.
I don't know about that. They talk about bubblegum cards. That's interesting. Do you know the color of the first successful bubblegum was pink? Because it was the only color the inventor had left. And so it just stuck, and it's been traditionally pink.
What else was he doing with the other colors?
He was making the failed examples of gum, which people never survived with that, I guess. But it is true that you can remove gum from your hair with peanut butter,
That's what I had heard.
There you go. So you can do that. And kids spend $500 million on bubble gum every year in North America. That is a lot of bubble gum.
How about Valley Girls? How many billions of dollars do Valley Girls spend on gum?
They spend $495 million.
You're making that up.
No, I am making that up. It's true.
Like a lot.
So like exactly. It's totally cool chewing gum. Like I love it so much because I get to chew while I talk. Like I get to do two things at once, and I love multitasking. Whenever I get a chance to do it, I really love to do it. So it gives me the opportunity to do that like all the time.
This is deeply disturbing me. Really a lot. A whole lot. So Russ, I wanted to ask, because I know that we did our review of soda, which you were not involved with, and I know that's fortunate because we know what you would have given it. But what's your feeling on chewing gum?
Evil.
Yeah. You feel the same way about chewing gum, or you have the same feelings about it?
Well, no, because soda was specifically designed to kill people, so I don't think that chewing gum would really have the same.
I see.
Okay, to be fair, to addict them and slowly, eke out their life force until they were an empty husk of a diseased bag of flesh, and then kill them after 50 years of loyal service to Coca-Cola. But I digress. No, chewing gum.
It's like cigarettes. They just wanted them to get addicted. I don't think they wanted to, destroy them eternally.
Well, here's the thing.
You're right. I think it is the same exact thing. Cigarettes and soda are exactly the same.
Right. Okay.
Except for a second. There's no secondhand soda. That's the only difference.
Then that's fortunate. But back out of the gum thing. When I was growing up, the one thing that I had trouble with on the chewing gum side of things was bubble gum was always really difficult for me because I had so much freaking trouble blowing bubbles. And people were always like, oh, you just widen, you sort of stick it on the top and the bottom of your teeth with your tongue, and then you blow through, and they were speaking in Swahili, and then you do this, and then you take the square of the hypotenuse.
But it's the same thing with me for whistling. You can whistle really, really well.
Bring that up.
But I cannot whistle at all. Yes, Greg, okay. But now I can't, demonstrate how I can blow a bubble, so...
I was going to say, I was giving you a chance for a video on blowing bubbles. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I was actually going to say the exact same thing. It is just a weird tongue/lips technique that you have. You can either do it or you can't.
Right.
It's that sort of thing.
I see. I
Either
see.
You can blow a bubble or you can spit your gum into somebody's face.
That's
Those
right.
are the only two
exactly.
options.
I would do this where I'm like, blow it. I'm like, blow it. Like, two. I'm like, oh, there's another piece of gum that's blood. And so, what now, in terms of like gum favorites, now, I always grew up in a lot of cases, my dad would often have like breath gum. Like, he'd have like, you know.
Breath gum.
Well, you know what they call it. Like, not Orbit, but like, you know, the.
The Orbit didn't exist back then.
Number five.
And you grew up with that. And then I would have a friend of mine, a couple of friends would be chewing, like, quote, regular gum.
Uh-huh.
And they'd pull out these things, like, Bubblicious that looked to me like these massive... I'm like, oh, my God, you chew that?
Bubblicious was awesome.
That was crazy,
well, that's
the
problem.
So.
You're probably trying to blow bubbles with, like, Altoids or something, Greg, and you can't really do that.
Yeah, you need more gum, clearly. Or Big League Chew, which I figure will be a nice segue into the baseball. Yeah. But I always, you know, did you ever have Big League Chew, Russ, growing up? Was that like a thing that you
never.
Participated
in? It was popular when I was little, and I saw it around, but it just did not look appealing.
Yeah.
I was never a candy person, so gum was not super big with me, and especially not candy-looking gum.
Yeah, I like Trident, because I was not a big super candy. I always loved chocolate, but I was never a super big candy person.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a little bit less sugary tasting than the others. But I did have that Big Chew once. It was kind of, it was fun, because, you get to, like, put it in your mouth like you were a baseball player, and, you know, you can, like, keep putting it in your mouth until, like, you have this big wad
and
of
have to,
gum
like,
in
your
cheek.
A bunch of times and spit all over the place. And
exactly.
Yeah,
right.
I might have not done
player.
That part.
You didn't grab your crotch?
No.
Okay, that's probably good. Well,
I'm sorry, that's only while you're chewing the Japanese brand.
Right. Ba-bum-ching.
Right. Well, according to the International Chewing Gum Association, young and old people from around the world say they enjoy chewing gum because it relaxes and eases tension, freshens breath, helps one stay alert and awake, moistens mouth, helps concentration, helps resist the urge to smoke, acts as a pleasant way to take vitamins and medicine, reduces ear discomfort. There's only three more. Satisfies snack cravings, cleans teeth after meals, and it's fun.
You know what? And I'm going to question a lot of those. I mean, the whole satisfies the snack cravings brings me to my previous point of it might make you more hungry. Then go up further about the reduces stress thing.
Relaxes and eases tension. I've heard
when
that
I,
from some people.
Yeah, but when I'm like feeling a little manic, I chew gum. Like it's. I don't think it makes me relax. I think it makes me a little bit more. It's like the bouncing the knee. I don't think it necessarily really like relaxes you. It more just kind of continues to kind of hype you up. But not only that, I had a friend. One of Russ, you might find this semi-funny, semi-triggering. One of my fellow comics couldn't do our show last Saturday, because she woke up, moved her jaw, and it locked. She then proceeded to have to go. Yeah.
Oh,
then she proceeded
sorry, that
to have
was
to
my mildly funny reaction.
Right. Very good. Well done. Then she proceeded to have to go to the emergency room for 5 hours, and they gave her a mouth night guard, and told her not to chew gum
or to open her mouth again.
You know, I actually have like a less severe version of that.
Yeah.
Permanently.
What do you mean?
Like my jaw's dislocated.
Yeah. I think my mom's like that.
Oh, really?
Like you can pop it out and pop it back in again.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
And it's partially because, not because of gum, but because as a child playing video games, you know, some people when they're like in the zone concentrating have
a kick,
like whatever, they'll like stare. My thing was moving my jaw back and forth and chewing.
Oh, really?
And so that caused it to dislocate, yeah.
It
happens sometimes. It'll go off kilter. And then my bottom jaw will fall off.
That sounds like really unpleasant.
Juice.
A lot.
That really
does. Well, she doesn't. She never really was a gum chewer, so it's not. It's going to be easy for her to give it up. But it just speaks to that about it. If it can be overdone, because it can be kind of a repetitive stress, like you were talking about. If you chew gum a lot, that repetitive motion could cause damage or extra stress on those muscles. So. It needs to be done with care.
With care and with caution, that's true.
Right.
But it is something which...
Are there any warning labels on gum? I've never seen one.
Just about contributing to tooth decay if it's not sugarless, right?
Yeah, probably avoiding swallowing. Don't give to small children. I don't know. Pull out your gum, Greg.
Oh, yeah. What's your guys' take on swallowing gum? Do you swallow gum or do you spit it out?
Ugh. Oh, God, no.
No, I spit it out, man.
But yeah.
Have you ever swallowed gum?
By accident, yeah.
Yeah, I was in the emergency room for a year. No, I'm just kidding.
But yeah, that's true. There were some people that just swallow it.
It doesn't really have any warnings.
A lot of people just eat it. It's like food.
Except to say that it contains a milk-derived ingredient.
That's the only warning?
That's the only warning. So that's the only thing that's to be feared. Yeah.
What if you have like an ulcer? Shouldn't you try to swallow gum? as like a
to like cover up the ulcer. I see. Great.
No, I don't think
that's... I have that stuff for like spare tires. This little spray that you spray in the hole in the spare tire and it's like rubber.
Oh, yeah. Totally works.
Like
of course.
You do.
It's
exactly
I see the logic
like
of
extra
that.
Extra stomach.
Yeah, I see the logic of that, but
it
I wouldn't recommend
like
it.
It's pink.
Yep.
It looks like it would fit.
Makes sense to me. All right, so let's have a rating for chewing
gum.
Oh, go ahead. Yes.
MacGyver loves chewing gum, too. I'm sorry. And
oh, that's right.
Everything that he ever
that's
did.
That's right.
He
that's,
built things like crazy.
That works in its favor, no question.
Right.
All right, so what do we want to say for a rating for chewing gum?
7.
I'd be inclined to say a 6.
6 is fine.
Russ, what do you think?
I would give it a 5. I don't really care whether it exists or not, but I don't think it's bad, necessarily.
All right, okay. 7, 5, 6. Works out to a 6 to me.
6 it is.
Does that make sense?
Yep.
All right, so a 6 out of 10 for the chewing gum, bubble gum combination.
Okay.
Go blow some bubbles today.
Okay.
So, on to our next topic, and it's as I say, it's a good segue into baseball, because for a long time, baseball had the problem where it was associated with chewing tobacco, and there was a sort of major switch out to chewing gums. You'll sometimes see guys out there with huge wads of chewing gum. So, the baseball thing fits. You can find the website for this, by the way, at www.mlb.com. And we know that this is a particularly American sort of thing. I mean, there is a Canadian team, Toronto, but
in
it's
Japan,
not some... And Japan, that's true.
In a lot of American countries.
It's not big at all in Europe
Republic.
Or any of those kinds of things. That's true. That's
well, it's
true.
Like that. It's like that Eddie Izzard joke where he said that World Series. You know, go America. You just win that every year. I don't know. It's just amazing.
I know.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it's true. I mean, why do we call it the World Series other than being Amerocentric?
Well, because you know the world should want to be a part of it.
It is. It's the best baseball players in the world.
Right.
Not like there are some Australians who are missing out. Who
oh,
the
there might
the
be. There might be other South America South
no.
Americans.
We should
there
ask some
Japanese.
Of our Australian listeners.
Aren't.
We should read some. What are, you know, Tim? You know, other Australian listeners of ours. What do you think? Should there Bernadette? You know, should baseball is baseball a bigger part of? I mean, I know cricket's a big part of Australian culture, but not maybe not baseball so much.
So you're saying that since American teams bring together all the great players from all of the other countries, it technically can be
right.
considered.
I'm not making a racist argument. I'm saying that all the best talent comes here because that's where they make the money and
right.
that's where the best competition is.
I see, okay. I see.
Well, that makes some sense.
And, you know, baseball right now is probably about 50% or less Caucasian, so overall.
No, I don't think I was making racist saying you were racist. I was simply making a Amerocentric point.
I was, though. What's wrong with you, Russ?
Yeah, no, I don't even think. I think the Dominican Republic
right.
statistically has the best baseball players in the world.
Okay.
It's like, I think, what, like 50 out of every 100,000 become a baseball player professionally or some crazy. It's like a lot.
Oh, yeah, because
yeah.
there's the,
makes
that's
sense.
Their ticket out.
So what then do you, I mean, I guess there's a number of ways we can go about this. I assume people generally know the idea of what baseball is about. Baseball is played on the infield as a diamond shape, and you've got 4 bases, right? First base, second base, third base, and home. And the way that you win a game is you score more runs than the other team, and you score a run by getting to home base. You have to go through all the other bases first. So you run to first, you have to get to second, then to third, and then to home. And every time you do that, you score a run, and the team that scores more runs actually wins the game. But within that, there are a lot of sort of subtleties, there are a lot of different rules that are involved and so on. And I think one of the sort of major criticisms that gets made against baseball is the fact that people who, you know, are sort of not familiar with it and haven't grown up with it tend to say it's not that interesting. I don't, interestingly, get this from people who like cricket. Our friend Wayne, originally from Australia, he actually enjoyed the baseball game he watched, but he loves cricket. So, you know, he said from his point of view, like, if there's anything less boring than cricket,
then
it would be fine.
But I would wonder whether or not other cricket players would agree.
Well, I don't know.
I'm sure a lot of baseball people would see cricket and go, oh my god,
well,
this is slow and boring.
Maybe, I guess so. But I mean, you know, the idea that there doesn't seem to be as much that's happening. But I don't know. What do you think about that, Russ? Like, what draws you to baseball specifically?
The art of baseball. I think it's the most artistic of the major sports that we have here in the country. The fact that it's an event-based game rather than a time-based game.
Uh-huh.
That is, that there is no time limit and things only move forward when something happens, not when something happens on a clock.
Uh-huh.
I like that about it.
Right. How is it artistic? What
I
do
like
you mean?
The one-on-one, the mind games. I don't know. I mean, there's just something about, it's really hard to explain, something about the nature of the game, trying, you know, Yogi Berra said the hardest thing to do in all of sports is to hit a round ball with a round bat and hit it squarely.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something about that whole setup that is not like, it's really different. It's more of an old world mentality.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the least athletically based of all the sports, but the most having to do with mind games and outthinking your opponent. And there are a lot of things I like about baseball.
Okay. I think it's also associated most with literature. It's associated most with art. You know, you have a lot of historians and writers and artists who write more about baseball as a sport and how it affects them than about any other sport. You know, a lot of these sort of crossover historian writers, when they write about sports, they tend to write about baseball a large portion of the time.
Well, I always thought that was because it's the quintessential American sport.
Oh, that's true,
it's
too.
Like
sure.
What, it's like
too.
Writing about apple pie. It's like writing, you know, write about baseball.
But there is a kind of mystique to it, though. I mean, it's sort of associated with youth, you know, growing up, you know, playing. And, it's interesting. Back in the day, everyone used to play stickball or baseball, and it became, and, you know, there's been this whole argument about, as one gets older, has baseball sort of fallen behind? I think there was a time, probably about 10 years ago, when it had fallen behind the other sports. I don't know that, at least from an American perspective, I don't know that that's true anymore. I mean, this is all strictly American. We know that soccer is king, but football, regular football, non-American football is king.
Well, yeah,
but
ever since
the national
home run
stage,
thing happened,
right,
it's been good.
Exactly. Thanks to Sosa, McGuire, and steroids, everything got back together. But, you know, baseball's become more of a big deal.
America owes, baseball owes its life to steroids.
Well, and that's the other big negative, of course, is the big steroid scandal for the last few years. You know, Barry Bonds, who's a player for the Giants, is this season probably going to break Hank Aaron's record for the most home runs in a season. And by the way, again, for people who don't know, a home run is a ball that is hit either out of the yard, so it means that nobody can get the ball, nobody catches the ball to make an out. It just gets hit out of the yard by the player. Or it's one where somebody gets from first to second to third to home on the same play without being thrown out. And it's obviously the sort of most important thing within the sport, because if you hit a home run, you immediately score a run. Anybody on the bases ahead of you scores ahead of you. So a home run is considered to be a big deal. It's kind of the most sexy of the records that we have in sports, I think. And, you know, Bonds is going to break the all-time record. And basically, a huge portion of that has come when he was older, and clearly based on the fact that he's been doing steroids. I mean, he denies it, but it's clearly true to anyone who, you know, the evidence is overwhelming that he did steroids. And that's a big thing that baseball has to deal with. I mean, you know, all these other sports, football and everything else, has to deal with steroids too. But for some reason, baseball seems to be the one most tainted by the steroid scandal. And I'm not really sure why that is, but it's there.
It's because baseball is more reliant on statistics than any other sport. Mm-hmm. Other sports rely on the action and the day-to-day, you know, activities. But baseball is, like you guys said, all about history. And everyone, and the reason it's such a non-technological game, the game is played exactly the same way now as it was 100 years ago, means that we should be able to compare players from that era to players now.
Yeah, okay.
You know, certain advances, and especially like genetic advances and other, you know, drugs and things like that have sort of tainted that comparison. And that's why people are so upset about it.
I see. Whereas they just sort of expect it going into football.
A big problem.
I think that it's affected, I mean, like, some, it's affected some people's understanding and love for the game, or, you know, whatever. It has an impact on some, and some people just don't think about it,
yeah.
I guess. But
I mean, the perception is huge. I personally don't think it's a big deal based on the fact that I think it's a good thing that professional athletes who devote their whole lives to this should do everything within their power, even shorten their own lifespan to be better at baseball.
Oh my God.
They should do whatever they can to be as good as they can without cheating.
What?
If they haven't broken any rules,
cheating.
They should do it.
But it is
if
cheating.
If they can have, like, a third arm grafted onto their body to hold the bat better so that they could swing and hit more home runs, they should do that.
I see. Based on the fact that you like watching them play.
Based on it's their job to be as effective as they possibly can doing their job. That's why they make millions of dollars a year. So
man.
If that means you sign a contract with the devil, like in the play Damn Yankees, to be an amazing player and lose your soul, then that's what you do. Because that's
but
what
you were
the most
a great baseball
thing is winning baseball games.
I know, it's true. Well, this is the way that some baseball players feel, that it's more important than anything else that exists. And so because of that, you know, I mean, that's what it's all about.
It is, and in their world it is.
Yeah.
It's their whole life. And if it's your whole life, then you give up a few years of your life to be better at it while you do it.
I see.
Makes sense.
Sure, a lot of sense. Right? Makes a whole lot of sense. We also want to mention, you know, obviously we're all, you know, we're definitely big baseball fans, especially Russ and myself. And Russ and I are fans of the Yankees and the Red Sox, respectively, that are in the same division. So we are continually, you know, sort of having discussions with each other about how the teams are doing and everything, because these teams play play each other, because that's the other thing about baseball. You play 162 games in a regular season. So it's a long season. You play a lot of games. And I think that contributes the sense to that it's sort of part of the fabric. It's part of the culture. You know, it just sort of, oh, what happened in the game last night? Whereas in football, it's very much event-oriented. It's like, oh, what's the game this week or what's the game this week? Whereas in baseball, it's every night, you know, it's three-game series, it's four-game series, sometimes they're doubleheaders, and it's just a constant everyday sort of thing. And I think that also sort of changes the way. I like that, but I think that some people may find that it's too much. And, you know, my dad always was like that. You know, my dad would always sort of wake up when it came to baseball in the playoffs, and then he would always, you know, base everything on, well, this guy is due. Daddy's hitting 0.55. That's right. He hasn't had a hit in 50 at-bats. He's due. Any moment now, the law of averages will take over. You know, so that was my dad's theory about baseball. But yeah. So.
Yeah, that's one other thing that I love about baseball, by the way, is the uncertainty and the it's like, I think there are parallels between people who follow things like the stock market and people who follow odds and probabilities and baseball, because you're essentially trying to define the unknowable. And in each given at-bat, nobody knows what's going to happen, but you can, you know, based on long-term trends, you can sort of figure out what people are going to do. And that sort of also works for life in general. There's a lot of uncertainty in the short term, but in the long term, you can map out things a little bit more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's cool, too.
Makes sense. So okay. What do you...
Red Sox suck.
Give me... Yankees last place. So, Clea, what do you? So, Clea, what's your take as a member of a team that's sort of up and coming?
Up and coming.
A fan of a team that's
down and going.
Down and going. Exactly. What's your take on baseball, man?
Oh gosh.
I know it's not your favorite sport to watch, except maybe in the playoffs in certain circumstances, right?
It's my favorite sport to watch live.
Okay. Because she likes to keep score.
Possibly second to tennis, but one of my least favorite to watch on television, because it is so boring. But when you're there, it's exciting, it's the event, it's interesting, and yeah, I keep score.
And see, Russ and I use this thing called MLB TV, which you can get and we highly recommend, which allows you to watch all games that are out of your local market. So basically, if they're not showing it on TV in your area, you can watch it on the computer.
And this is kind of cool, this game day thing.
Yeah, this game day. It's MLB.com game day. MLB's done a lot of that stuff, and Russ and I love it. So we're sort of the opposite of boring.
Picture of the bat guy, the guy at bat, and each pitch, where it's landing, and whether or not it's a ball or a strike or a foul.
It's true.
It's kind of cool.
It's as if you're watching the game, but in a very slow, static way.
So it's baseball.
No!
Oh, sorry.
So different. So different.
It's like the Simpsons episode where they take away beer, and suddenly Homer's like, oh, this game.
And the beach ball's hit on the field, and they're trying to take, the ball boy's trying to decide which one of them's going to go get it. This is boring without beer. Yeah.
I'm sorry, you were saying, Russ?
I don't know what I was saying. Something about how... Oh, I know. It's the old worldiness of baseball. Uh-huh. Is that today we all have ADD and we can only sit still for 3-second commercials and video montages. But in baseball, it is. It's more about being relaxed, and it's like an outdoor picnic sport.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It really is something that you can do with other people. You go, and maybe this is what cricket is like for people. You can go and talk while you're watching, and then if something exciting happens, you can watch. And in basketball and football and stuff like that, there isn't as much of an opportunity to do that. You kind of need to keep your eye on the game if you're really going to be
unless you're a fan of the Cardinals, in which case you know what's going to happen, so there's really no need. But most times, yes, you do need to focus on the
game.
Are
you making fun of the
Arizona Cardinals? Yes I am.
Baseball team?
No, the football team.
Oh, okay.
I was just pointing out there are some
Cardinals
teams. Yeah, the football team, not so good. I was just pointing out that in that case you don't really have to pay attention to them because they're bad.
Okay.
But in most cases, certainly that's true.
Okay.
So what do we want to say for our rating? Clea, we can start with you again.
1, 2, they strike you out at the old ball game.
I give that little rendering a 9.5.
Thank you.
Now, what was the rating you'd like to give the game itself?
I have a real issue with how much money these people make, and there's no cap.
That's true. There's sort of a luxury tax now, but...
Yeah. I have a real issue with the steroids thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to give it a 7.
A 7, huh? I cannot go that low, I'm afraid. In my mind, although steroids are an issue, And although the money situation is also an issue, it's better than it used to be. And I find the game to be interesting to watch for the reasons that Russ has explained. And also, you know, I'm a Red Sox fan. And of all the sports teams, the Red Sox are the team that I really feel most closely allied to. You know, the one I think the baseball team takes on the character of its city to a degree. And it's one of the reasons that I really, you know, took such joy when, you know, the Red Sox won the World
Series.
Yeah, until they're
offered a
better
contract with Yankees.
Yeah, but it's, I know that. I understand that. Well, that's Johnny Damon, who's a traitor. His bastard, but that's, you know, most of the time we're not facing that situation. But I would say I would have
to rate
it. He was
the first, and he won't be the last.
I would have to rate it probably an 8, is what I would say. Russ, what about you?
For my rating, I will quote James Earl Jones from the movie Field of Dreams. The one constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball. America's rolled by like an army of steamrollers. It's been a race like a blackboard, rebuilt and erased again. But baseball has marked the times. This field, this game, it's a part of our past, Ray. It reminds us of all that once was good and could be again. Oh, people will come, Ray. People will most definitely come. 10.
Thunderous applause. That was tremendous. Wow, that was very moving. That was great.
Thank you.
So
No. 10 plus 7 plus 8 does not equal that. I'd say it had to be between an 8 and a 9. So we'd have to say, it really should be an 8.5, but
you know. All right.
So an 8 out of 10 with a heavy disagreement on Russ's part for more positive for Major League Baseball. If you haven't had a chance to see some games, see if you can check them out online. They're fun, and we'd be interested to hear your feedback, especially if you're not familiar with the game. We'd be interested in that. The last item we have for you today is a person. Again, this is brought to you by Chris from the Sluggy Freelance People. And this is Ralph Nader, the politician, consumer advocate, and so on. And you can find his webpage at www.nader.org.
Greg, are you going to be able to be unbiased
here? Yes, I will be unbiased and objective. So let's just talk a little bit of a very, very brief history of Ralph Nader. Ralph Nader started as a consumer advocate. He was a lawyer and was probably best known for his work in getting more safety standards established on consumer items, particularly cars. The one that he was most famous for, he wrote a book called Unsafe at Any Speed, where he exposed a car called the Corvair, which it was turned out was extremely unsafe to drive in. And basically the car companies had, you know, lied about it and said, no, this is fine, and it's ridiculous, and this is just anecdotal, and there's no real evidence. So Nader basically took a whole series of people and did all these studies and tests and, you know, mounted all this legal action and essentially made it more expensive for them to keep fighting these lawsuits than to either pull the car off the market or redesign it substantially, and they ended up ultimately pulling it off the market. So Nader started out his career as a consumer advocate and somebody that everybody liked. Later in his career, Nader became interested in politics. No, I'm not going to go away from the like part. I'm gonna be honest. I'm gonna be objective here.
Okay.
And he started. He was the.
Then he started murdering kittens left and right.
No. He started doing work in politics, and he became the candidate on several occasions for the Green Party, and his whole thing was he wanted to establish a legitimate third party presence in America. He said the big problem is you've got two parties dominating the system, that, you know, there's no way to really make adjustments that system, and that, you know, what?
Can I finish?
Yes, this is a little bit after Perot, yeah. He wanted to make a legitimate, you know, third-party presence. And so Nader was the Green Party nominee on several occasions.
Green Party, which is pretty legitimate in a lot of other countries.
Absolutely. Oh, which is huge, especially in Europe, absolutely. And so that's what he tried to do. The problem was, in the year 2000 is when this came up most. You have a close presidential election between Al Gore and our current president, George W. Bush. I think listeners to this show will know our general feeling about him. And it was such a close election that any third party, including Ralph Nader's party, could basically turn the election either way. And Nader, rather than backing out of the election and, you know, sort of getting concessions from the candidate, especially Al Gore, stayed in the election. And so what he ended up doing was his group of people ended up drawing enough support from Al Gore in a couple of key states, particularly Florida, that Al Gore ended up losing the states, ended up losing the election, and so we ended up with George W. Bush, and 8 years later, we ended up with Iraq. So that's basically... That's kind of the way things broke down. Now, Nader has, if anything, Nader also ran again in 2004, but he was not really a significant issue this time around in the election, partly because of what happened in 2000, because people were so angry, Democrats especially, were so angry at Nader, that they all basically said they would never vote for this guy again because of what he did. And you saw a huge drop-off in his support in 2004, and you've seen, I think, an even more significant drop-off since then. Now, on the local level, Green Party candidates continue to do well. But as a national candidate,
thing, right.
Nader has really hurt the Green Party on
and
a national
thing,
stage.
Again, and I don't know, I mean, trying to remain unbiased here, we don't know really the role, but at least my point of view, and I think it's Greg's as well, is that if Nader had compromised, if he had said, okay, I've gotten this far, I've definitely shown my presence, I'm not going to win, therefore, what way could I possibly still be a legitimate contender around taking the Green Party to the next level?
Yeah.
And it's possible that he could have been a part of the cabinet, or he could have been. Could he have ever been?
I think he would have been a part of the cabinet. In fact, I'd almost guarantee it. I think he would have been made a part of the cabinet by Gore.
Could have taken that next step. I mean, it doesn't have to be a pendulum. It doesn't. It's not going to work that way. You can't suddenly go from centuries of two party to suddenly go to three party. But a stepping stone like that could have made a real significant difference. And that's where I think he was.
We think. I mean, we don't know for sure, but
that's
but
where
we
I
think.
Kind of feel like he was a little short sighted.
You have a difference of opinion on this, though, Russ. I think right. Like, what's your feeling about Nader?
Yes. I just don't see playing the blame game with the George Bush thing. You can argue that if Bill Clinton didn't have his sex scandal, people would not have been looking for a moral Republican to fill the White House 4 years later.
Sure.
You can argue that regardless of Nader's influence in the election or not, that Gore still won the election and Bush essentially stole it via his brother, who was the governor of Florida,
also fair.
Via Catherine Harris, via the Supreme Court, who was, you know, Republican-leaning. So those are all things that can't, you know, Nader can't be blamed for. And obviously the actions of Bush and the Bush family themselves, I don't see how you can blame Nader for that. Those things either, and no.
Well, I mean, a lot of that is.
Well, we can though if when he says comments like "there's no difference between the two candidates,"
which he said on many occasions, and which is just wrong. I mean, you know, and he said, "I'd rather." At one point, he said, "I'd rather have a provocateur than someone who's passive." And I'm like, because of that attitude, we ended up with this war criminal who we have in office instead. So
yeah,
you know,
but it's possible in the long term that because of that attitude, we'll have like the most galvanized left wing that we've ever had in this country because people have. And I actually predicted this back in 2000 that if Bush gets elected, it'll be the best thing that ever happened to the left wing because people will hate him so much that they'll realize that they have no choice but to be involved in politics to oppose him.
And then he got elected for another
happening.
4 years.
Yeah, I mean, like, the problem is, Russ, wouldn't you have traded in the left wing being energized for the
kill you only
of,
makes you stronger.
Or it kills the Iraq. But that's what I mean, though. I mean, what about the hundreds of thousands of people
of
Iraqis
hundreds
got
of thousands
killed?
Of
yeah.
Iraqis,
I mean, that's the problem. I would have traded in
stronger?
A galvanized left
well.
Wing for the Iraq situation not happening, and it clearly wouldn't have if Gore had been in office.
Hopefully. Well. Well, no, we can make it out of this next year and a half without the world ending. I think we might be okay.
Right.
Oh, God.
But they won't is the point.
They're dead.
But I know what you mean. I mean, the one thing and I totally agree that that's all fair, and I certainly don't think, I do think Democrats have get a little bit too much into the, oh, it's all his fault. I don't think it's all his fault. But I do, I guess I object to Nader's incredible ego, which everybody knows to be substantial, and the fact that Nader made a lot of the election about himself, quite apart from everything else. Not only was I not going to vote for him because of his, I wasn't going to vote from because of his attitude and because he became basically a one issue guy. And this whole thing was, well, the problem is you can't vote for either party. It's like, why should we vote for you? You vote for me because you can't vote for either party. And you're like, no. What are your stances? What are your positions? And his specific positions were extremely vague, except on the things that he was very clear about from his previous experience, like consumer advocacy, campaign finance reform, the environment. On international policy, Nader has no experience and didn't pretend to. He's just like, well, we'll work that out at the time because remember, you can't vote for one of two parties. And, you know, he just, the one note thing just kept coming back over and over and over again. So that was a big concern
also,
that I had.
I think
too.
That he just didn't want to have an extensive foreign policy. I think that his policy would have been almost exclusively domestic, and he would have said, you know, it's not our job to be the policeman of the rest of the world.
Right.
It's not our job to be conducting wars overseas, and we'll set the example by doing things at home that other people should be doing.
Right.
And I think that would have been a lot healthier for the country if that had happened.
Right. And it would have been great if he could have been on the cabinet of Gore
influencing
and possibly influence that to be
instead
the case.
Of wiping out the third party for the next 30 years as a viable option, because that's what he basically did. He's made it so the same
thing. I think there's something to be said about not giving in to big money interests which run this country in the two-party system.
Oh, I agree.
And for the, you know, there's just such a broad spectrum of viable ideas that will never ever get any speaking time in the major political players because of the two-party system. And so it's something that is worth standing up against, I think.
Oh, I absolutely agree. My argument is that he's wiped out the two-party.
No, but what he's saying, Greg, is that you shouldn't compromise at all. You shouldn't accept, oh, you're just going to give me a little petty position. I'm not going to take that because I don't want no part of this.
To me, the question is, do you want a three-party, more than a two-party system? And what Nader did essentially set back the three-party system by 20 years. And I think that's working against his ultimate goal. If he wants three parties involved in politics, as you said, Clea, it's not going to happen in one election. It's not going to happen overnight. It has to happen through measurable, quantifiable goals. And it's certainly not going to happen by making everyone so angry that they say, because the same thing happened in 1980. My father worked for John Anderson, who was an independent presidential candidate. John Anderson wouldn't get out of the race when everyone knew the danger signs. Reagan gets elected, and we have the Reagan disaster for 8 years. That's what happened. And my father and a bunch of people at that time said, I will never, and he said, never vote for a third party again because of what they did. Fast forward now to 2000, the same thing happens. They say, I will never vote for a third party. So the question is, if you
fast
want a
forward,
third party in American government...
You don't even have to
government,
fast forward that far. Fast forward to Perot, who...
Well, but see, the thing about Perot is that he had so much money, it almost wasn't, it almost didn't count, you know what I mean? Because he almost was, like, beyond a third-party candidate. It was like, if Warren Buffett ran for office, you know, like, if Bill Gates was like, I'm running for office, like, you know, like, I don't know what to say.
I mean, the strange thing, though, is that every time this happens, the national dialogue is going to be exactly the same, because the people in charge of the media and the people who are in charge of talking points on both sides are going to say, oh, third parties are crap. They're just ruining everything. It's all their fault. And then that's what everyone else will say, because there's no viable alternative viewpoint that gets any airtime.
Until you get a viable viewpoint in there, though.
Until you get a viable viewpoint in there by baby steps.
Which is what would have happened here, right?
Well, I mean, he did get matching funds for the Green Party by getting 5% of the vote. That got them a lot more money for the future. So
I guess, but they sort of vanished as presidential possibilities. But I guess that's fair enough. And certainly you make a very good point about the fact that the main concern is the fact that this guy is in office is terrible, not that, you know, Nader created the situation. It's just he didn't help. And I wish that he'd be willing to at least have a little humility to acknowledge that. You know, even the Green Party itself kind of ditched him as a candidate for a while and had a big argument because he basically was like, I want to be the candidate again. And they had their own
the backlash. Absolutely.
Yeah. And they were like, no, we want this and that. And so that's always been an issue, too. But certainly, I mean, he certainly is a man of principle. I won't deny it. Of course, it's a little bit easier to be a man of principle when you're living in Greenwich, in Connecticut. You know what I mean? When you have he has the money, as a friend of mine once said about a mutual acquaintance of ours, he's got the money to be a Marxist. You know what I mean? Like he's got the money to be in favor of social programs and the like. And so I wonder a little bit about that with him on occasion. But you know,
yeah, but
certainly is a principled guy. I wouldn't deny that.
People that don't, you know, they get burned out. So
I know. No, it's true. That's true. All right, what do we want to say?
I mean, it is difficult for people who have to deal with the everyday working world to have any kind of higher philosophical thoughts or ideas at all.
Right.
They have to worry about surviving.
Right.
True. They can't even think about how do we fix the country.
Right.
True.
It's not their concern.
What do we want to say for rating for him then?
6.
5. I know Russ will be much higher. That's okay.
I'm going to give him a 6 also. I mean, I think that he has very good ideals. His political stances are right on line with mine. I don't think he's particularly charismatic or, you know, qualified to be the sort of president guy because of his demeanor. So, I don't know, because of that.
Mm-hmm.
He's good. I mean, he's better. And most politicians would get a 2 or 3, so.
I guess that's good. All right, so then a 6 out of 10 for Ralph Nader. All right, that's going to bring the show to a close for this week. We want to thank everybody for listening. Thank everyone for your suggestions. Mike, Chris, all the rest, and DI and all those people.
Keep
sending them in. Please send in all your review requests, recommendations, suggestions for podcasts, vidcasts, web comics, you know the deal. Anything that you think we'd be interested in, which is just about everything, you should send in to us and we will review it. Otherwise, we will see everybody next week. We also want to thank Russ for being here. Russ, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Russ.
Thanks, Russ.
Thank you, guys.
And we will see you guys next week for Upon Further Review. I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And I'm Russ.
See you next week.
The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
Well, it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
That was wonderful.
Bravo.
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away.
Hey, boo.
Boo.